You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. It's that time of week again, gentlemen. We're back again for, I guess, what, our 17th episode now? So time is flying this year. It's hard to believe that we're already into December. And yet there is still no AirPods. Our AirPod watch is still on high alert. They are still not shipped. Did you guys see the reason that they are allegedly delayed?
Yeah, it seems kind of strange that they wouldn't have that figured out from the very beginning. I guess that could be a fundamental problem since they aren't wired together, whereas most stereo Bluetooth headsets have a wire running between the left and the right side. But I mean, that seems like something pretty basic they would have figured out before they even announced the W1 chip.
That's kind of what I was thinking. It's kind of obvious, right? I mean, when you have headphones, you kind of want the same thing come through the right and the left at the same time. Like, that's a fundamental, like, if you had requirements for what headphones are supposed to do, that's like probably the top one.
So Gruber, his account said that it's just a manufacturing to scale issue. So he's calling out the Wall Street Journal article as incorrect, which, you know, they've had the pre-production units. People have been testing them, haven't had that happen. So I don't know, tend to make a lot of those tiny little things may have just been an issue. You know, it has to be serious if they miss the holiday season.
Definitely. I mean, I agree with you there. They would do whatever it took.
They don't want another Apple Maps.
They would do whatever it took to get this out for the holiday. Because if that's not the perfect $150 stocking stuffer, I don't know what is. I mean, that's so simple, and $150 a pop.
Yeah, the use case, I've been thinking about it the more that since they were announced. And my use case is sometimes, like, I'm cooking when my wife gets off work. I want to talk to her. She's talking to me over the Bluetooth in her car. If I put it on speaker, she can't hear. I don't want to be tethered by, you know, my normal ear pods. So having something that's there that works very, very well, that just sits in the ear, that I can just leave in there, that's not quite as obnoxious as a normal Bluetooth headset. Yeah, I think that would be really, really good. So that's one of the reasons I'm kind of irritated. Like, please hurry up and ship these.
I was actually looking at Bluetooth headsets last night while watching TV, just because I've been wearing my Sonys at work, and they're not the best for conference calls for work. They do end up having a little echo in them, and I'm in a large room usually when I'm doing conference calls. So they're not the best for doing work calls. I mean, they obviously work, but they just hasn't been the best. So
yeah, when I work from home, and I'm holding this up in our Skype, I know people that are listening can't see, but I'll put a link in the show notes. I actually have a gaming headset that I use when I'm doing work from home for conference calls.
Is that the HyperX?
That is the HyperX. I really like the HyperX. It was recommended to me by a friend of mine. Love it when I'm playing games. I love the mesh ear pads. They breathe very well. If you're going to be wearing them for hours and hours while you're playing games, it's great. But still, it would be nice to have a pair of earbuds that I could use that I could actually make a phone call on that don't stink. Because otherwise, if I'm not using that, I'm normally using my Apple earpods to make those conference calls. Though occasionally, if I'm feeling froggy, I'll use my podcasting setup to do conference calls, which is awesome. They can really hear me well when I'm doing that.
I just want to throw in there another plug for my Trex Titanium. Those are great. And they work great for your use case where you were talking about cooking and not wanting to be tethered. They work great for my phone calls, and they work great for when I just want to chill out and listen to music, or work and listen to music.
Which is funny, because those are your workout type earbuds, right? Those are the kinds that wrap around the back of your head, those types, right?
That's right. They go over the ear, wrap around the back of my head.
See, I've tried that with my workout earbuds, whose name escaped me at the moment, but I'll put a link in the show notes. They're Epic, something Epics. I forget, JLab Epic, I believe. Anyway, I've tried that with my workout buds, and they don't seem to, people always complain they can't hear me is the only problem. But I also secure the wiring to the back of my head, so that may have something to do with it. I don't know. But yours actually go off of the vibrations in your jaw, right? Sort of like the way the AirPods are supposed to.
Well, the hearing part does. The speaker part has a sort of a beat mechanism, you know, a drum mechanism, if you will, that hits your cheekbone as it drives the sound, whereas the mic is just still a normal mic. There's just a little hole there in one side of it that acts as the mic hole.
The ones I was looking at last night are by Blue Parrot. They're Bluetooth, And evidently, just from reading Amazon reviews, they're very popular with truckers because they've got kind of the boom and then the one-eared speaker. And supposedly the noise canceling on them is really well, that truckers can use them in their trucks where it's very loud. The microphone just picks up the person that's talking and not the surrounding noise, which is what I really need in the area that I'm going to be doing it. They're on sale at Best Buy right now, but none of the Best Buys in my area actually have them in stock. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I may order a pair and see how that goes and just leave them in my laptop bag just for work stuff. So we'll see.
Samsung is supposed to be removing the headphone jack from their next phone, the G8, it looks like. So who could have seen?
Thanks, Apple.
Who could have seen that coming? I don't know. It's like somebody comes up with these things first and then Samsung follows suit. So that's so weird. We've never seen this before. So it is worth pointing out that back in August when they announced the Note 7, they mocked Apple for removing the headphone jack. They were like, hey, our still has a headphone jack, which I guess it also acted as a vent for the flames to shoot out of when the notes would explode. So I guess that was something they weren't really counting on.
The exploding batteries were karma for the headphone jack knock.
Hey, at least they came up with an original feature that Apple didn't emulate, so.
I wish I could have made a prop bet on Samsung removing the headphone jack when the iPhone 7 come out, because that was easy money. It makes sense. It's painful, but it makes sense with the things they're doing with the phones now, where they're trying to make them waterproof. They're trying to go all digital, different kind of things. And the controls that you can get through a standard headphone jack is just not the same kind of things they can do with a more advanced plug. And so, yes, it's been painful. Yes, it's cost me at least $400 for a new Bluetooth headset, but somebody's got to do it. I mean, it's the same thing with the dongles and the new MacBook Pros. That's cost me an extra $100, $120, whatever I've spent on dongles now for a laptop that I don't even have right now. I mean, you got to step through the pain to get to the good side, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel too. I mean, I have a lot of friends who look to me as the, and I'm sure you guys have this too. Hey, you're the Apple guy. So whenever something like that happens, hey, what do you think of that? Can you believe they did that? Like it was your decision or something to remove it. But honestly, I haven't liked using, when I work out every day and I don't like using wired earbuds when I'm working out. It's not fun. I can remember having to do the little arm case you put your phone or your iPod in. That thing stank. I hated that. You inevitably get it caught on the workout equipment that you're working on, it's always been an issue. When I'm on a plane, I hate having to plug in the headphones. And if you have to get up and go to the restroom, it's always a big issue. And, it's a problem. I don't see how this is the more convenient solution. And, in a couple of years when everybody's doing it, we're going to look back and we're not going to believe that we ever had it. Though it is funny that The Verge had an article that says it's also user hostile when Samsung does it. We called Apple out for it. We're calling Samsung out for it. Yeah, but this is the way it's going. This is the move that always happens. Apple does it first. The other manufacturers follow suit. And then that becomes the standard. So, hey, you had it for 100 years. Had a good run. Can't think of another piece of technology you've had that's lasted that long. So let it go.
Well, it'll be easier for Samsung just because Apple's already taken all the heat for it.
Yeah, everyone expects it now. So that's the what do they say about the pioneers? They're the first one to get all the arrows, and then right. It goes.
Samsung delivered their heat a little bit differently.
They made people forget about the headphone jack by making the phones explode. So it's kind of like if you have a headache and someone stomps on your foot and says, "Now you don't even worry about your headache anymore." It's the same kind of thing. So let's see, Super Mario Run is going to be released this week finally for $10 on the 15th, but we found out some bad news about old Super Mario Run. It looks like it's going to require an always-on internet connection, which is a real, real bummer. So if you're playing on a plane, you're playing in a subway, this may be an issue for you. What do you guys think about Nintendo's decision to do this?
So I'm wondering if you're mid-run and you walk underground, is the game just going to stop? Or is it going to say, oops, you lost your internet connection and pause? I guess we won't know.
Or if you're driving down the highway, your kid's playing in the back seat and you hit a dead spot or something, is it just going to pause, or what's it going to do? Did I read that it's actually free and then it's $10 to unlock past level one or something like that? I think that's what it was going to be now.
I did not notice that. I need to go back and read. I was solely focused on the always on internet connection, and I knew it was supposed to be $10, but I didn't know if that was just a out and out cost or what.
It won't keep me from buying it. I think it's a hindrance, but it won't keep me from paying my $10 and seeing what it's all about.
Same here. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and get it. I just think that it's kind of short-sighted because this type of DRM really only inconveniences the people that pay for the game. The people that are actually giving you money are the people that are going to be hindered by this. There will be people who crack it. There will be people who figure it out, and they won't be impacted by this. So it always makes me wonder, like, what are you really trying to accomplish with this? Apple has one of the most locked down platforms out there. This isn't Android. This isn't something where you can easily sideload stuff. They're always trying to stay one step ahead of the jailbreakers. You could put a requirement in the game that whatever the most recent version of the OS is, that's what you have to be on, and make it happen so that it's within 10 days of being released, you have to upgrade to it. People would do it. That would be one way to keep people, to drag them forward and make sure that they update. Hey, you need to go ahead and update your OS to be able to continue using this game. That would stop a lot of the jailbreakers who do this type of stuff. There are ways around this without doing this seemingly draconian way of doing it, but it seems like a lot of trouble that's only going to impact the people that gave you money and is not going to hurt the people who didn't. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree completely. The exactly the way you said it, it's always been that way with DRM or any kind of limiting pieces that developers put into software because of piracy. I respect that they're trying to stop piracy, but whenever they do anything like that, it ends up hurting the people who pay for the software, and the people who weren't going to pay for the software still aren't paying for it. And most of the time, they're ingenious enough to work around it. So I mean, Pokemon Go is always on, but that's because of the nature of the game. You can't play it without having a connection to the internet to find Pokemon and do the things you do. So nobody said anything about that, but that's just because of the nature of the game. I think we think of Mario and that type of game as something that you could just play anywhere. You know, you've got your Nintendo DS and you lock a kid in a closet and you say, here, play Mario all day long. You know, I'm going to buy the game, and I think a whole lot of other people buy the game. I think the bigger deal here is that it's $10, and I don't think that's ridiculous. I know y'all don't think that's ridiculous, but I think there's a lot of people who, and I don't agree with, that are going to say $10 for a phone game, but you would go out and pay $30 for a Nintendo DS game on something that's slower, got a crappier screen than your phone. I mean, it's probably less of a game, and yet you'd pay $30 for a piece of plastic, and just because you're getting that piece of plastic cartridge, somehow it's worth $30 instead of, you know, $10 or whatever.
Or they pay $10 for some virtual currency that's within the game. One thing I do remember from the announcement was they were talking about the Mario Run head-to-head mode, where you can game against your friends and you can actually see the other person's progress sort of in a ghosted avatar, and they run along as beside you as you run along. And I can see where obviously you would need an always on internet connection for that, but that's just a mode of play that you just wouldn't be able to use when the internet wasn't connected, or if you had a poor internet connection. You should still be able to play Mario Run while offline. So it does seem like there's not necessarily a nefarious reason, but there's still sort of a backdoor reason. And it may not actually be a DRM thing. They may have some other secret reasoning behind it that they haven't revealed.
No, they explicitly said they were concerned about piracy is the reason they're doing it.
Ah, gotcha.
So that's what's disappointing about that. So I don't know. It just seems sort of strange to me. And if that is the reason the game doesn't sell well, then that would be, oh, well, you know, we made a game, it didn't sell well, so we're not going to do anything else for this platform. So maybe we should just count our blessings, we get one at all, but I still think it's kind of silly. That being said, it came out this week that Sony's PlayStation division is going to release 6 iOS games next year. Do you guys see this?
I did. I think that's pretty cool because it's Sony leaning harder on their software more so than their platform that they created. So it's kind of like, you know, Sega back in the day, whenever their hardware died off, but they kept making software titles. You can still buy Sega software or Sega games for different platforms.
Yeah, it seems silly not to be on at least one of the premier mobile platforms. You gotta wonder, as they see the rise of both iOS and Android, and it's probably their own mobile platforms can't seem to keep up with that. Why not be on those platforms? Maybe not put your flagship games, put something out there, for goodness sake.
I'm really not too up on the consoles or what PlayStation is doing or what really Xbox is doing. I don't read a lot of that news. It doesn't come across my viewport for that kind of stuff. But as far as PlayStation goes, just throwing this out there completely, Brian and Brad don't even know this is coming, but I got to play on the PlayStation VR headset this week at a friend's house. It was very cool. I really enjoyed it. It was, the headset was super comfortable. I had never done VR before. I'd never strapped on any of those headsets, done any of that. And when I put that headset on, even the PlayStation login screen, I was just like, that is so awesome. It's like I'm looking at a 96-inch TV on the wall just straight in front of me and controlling the things. And I did a couple of the demos, like this shark diving demo thing that was really cool. And then I played Robinson the Journey, a little bit of that game. It was really neat. So I don't usually get to mess around with the consoles, but I went to see a friend in St. Louis and she had just purchased it for herself. Like, her kids both have PlayStations in the room, but she wanted the VR and bought it. And it was very, very neat.
You keep talking like that. You know you're going to force me to go out and buy both a PS4 and the VR stuff. You know that, right? I keep hearing these good things. So, you know, this summer I came very close to getting either the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive. I was on the fence about either one. And I think what's kept me from doing it, and they were on sale on Black Friday as well, I think what kept me from doing it is that most of the experiences out there still, and I'm not talking about the PlayStation, I'm talking about the ones that are based on the PC. A lot of what is out there feels kind of like VR demo at this point. You know what I mean? Where it's like, hey, this is just showing off what it can do, but not really compelling.
But there's no real software yet.
Yeah, not what I would call like a super compelling, but that PS4 looked pretty good. So what games are available for that, Jim? What did you try out?
The thing I did, so I did the demo, which is like you get in a shark cage and you go, you know, dive down and you're looking for treasure.
Human chum.
And then a shark attacks you while you're in the cage. And it was very cool. And then the only other game I played was Robinson the Journey. I believe that's what it was called. And it's kind of like you're in an environment that reminds me of Avatar. And you're, so you're walking around and you've got to solve puzzles or figure out what to grab a hold to unlock this or throw things to do that. And so I didn't start from scratch on that. She had a game in progress and was like, this will be much more fun than you just starting from scratch. So I kind of just started playing on her game and was walking around the trees and sliding down rope slides and, you know, things like that. And it was very cool. I think I was most impressed by just the headset felt. It was very comfortable. It seemed like something that I could sit there and do for a while. Now, I probably played for, I don't know, 30 to 45 minutes maybe. And when I took the headset off, I was a little bit woozy because I'm prone to a little bit of motion sickness like that, where I'm fine with roller coasters, but things like that where you're watching something move and you're not actually moving. So I was a little woozy when I stood up, but it was very cool. Very cool tech. And I mean, it's a lot of gear there because there's the like a new PlayStation and this big, huge box that attaches to the PlayStation. And then the big headset that you got. And if you want, you have the controller, or there's like these two sticks that you can hold in your hand to do things. And then you've got to be sitting in front of the camera for it to be able to detect, you know, your movement so you can do it in the game. So there's a lot of moving parts there, but it was very neat. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was.
I noticed there is a Batman Arkham VR game for PS4, and that piques my interest as someone who loves Arkham Origins, Arkham City, Arkham Knight. I love all of those Arkham games, even the ones that suck.
I can see where that would probably translate very well. It was similar to this game where I was in, where you're walking around and you're doing stuff. And the closest thing I can relate it to is like Half-Life. Remember Half-Life, where you'd have to walk around and
yep.
And you would be shooting people, but it was puzzles and things you had to do as well. You had to figure out how to get out of this room or into this room or things like that. But this, the one I was playing was in a like an Avatar environment.
Interesting. I gotta pick one of those up, or at least maybe I'll stop by Best Buy or one of those and demo it or something. Just see what it's like.
The 12-year-olds will be like, the old guy's hogging the VR.
Get out of here, kid. Go play with the DS.
This old guy can buy all of them up so none of you get any. Mwahaha. Exactly. Go play with your Super Mario Run. Daddy needs an Arkham VR experience. If you can be Batman, be Batman. So let's see. Another big thing that happened this week was Pebble was acquired by Fitbit. The Pebble is no more. A lot of people who had backed their Kickstarter not getting refunds until potentially March. What do you guys think about Pebble getting scooped up by Fitbit?
Well, it's probably an acquisition of two, sort of a two-headed thing. I would think, one, they're trying to absorb their tech, and two, trying to remove competition from the market. Jim and I both have a first-generation Pebble. Mind you, they were out 2 or 3 years maybe before the first-generation Apple Watch, but it had that e-ink screen on it, and it was rudimentary at best. I mean, it had some pretty neat connectivity, and, you know, it would ding when you got an email or a text, and you definitely felt like Dick Tracy when you were wearing it, that kind of deal. But I could see where there might be a potential for Fitbit to improve their tech based on whatever it is they may be doing inside of Pebble, be it some new app development or something that they're doing.
That the moment the Apple Watch came out, somebody was going to fall by the wayside. Right. There wasn't a market big enough for all of them. They had some cool e-ink stuff and their devices would last a while, but honestly, they weren't very, I don't know. I was never very much impressed by them. If something's going to be on my wrist, it needs to be multifunction. It needs to be something that does as much as possible instead of just one thing. It's one facet of something. You remember when Steve Jobs told Dropbox, you're not a product, you're a feature? I kind of feel like that when it comes to fitness. Like, if I'm going to have something that's always on my wrist, why not do something that can help me board a plane or, you know, buy a Coke out of a Coke machine or something like that? If it's just collecting health statistics, that's kind of lame now if that's the only function that it can do. What are your thoughts?
On that front, I think some people only want a Fitbit. They don't want all that other stuff. They couldn't figure it out. I mean, the Fitbit, I think, fits the market that it needs to be in. You know, there are people who just want a Fitbit and it's fine. The Pebble itself, it did always feel kind of chintzy. Even the first one, you know, it was plastic and it felt plasticky. It was kind of light. I know why they did a lot of that. I mean, it was a cheaper product. They were trying to get the price points down to sell these things. The e-ink screen allowed the battery to last longer than normal, you know, because the way the screen worked. So the thing that surprised me about the sale, when you sent this link out to Brad and I earlier this week, I actually wasn't aware that there was a current Kickstarter underway for like a newer version of the Pebble that now is dead, that it basically dies on the vine when purchased by Fitbit, and that those people will just get a refund and wait, you know, and they've had money from these folks for the better part of a year. And I know you're a huge fan of Kickstarter, Brian. And so, I mean, this proves your point exactly. I know that. But I think that's kind of crappy of Pebble, but you can't pick your, I mean, if you've got somebody that wants to acquire you and you're in a world of hurt and they're absorbing all your debt and everything, then you've got to do it. Customers be damned. And if the watch is going away anyway, then it doesn't matter. Customers be damned. You know, the Pebble name is gone now. You know, Fitbit wants the technology. Fitbit wants the people. They don't want to sell Pebbles.
Yeah, that's the thing. Maybe I'm old fashioned, but I think that if a company is going to release a product, it should be based off of sales of what they've already done, based instead of like, hey, let's raise money and do this. It's either accept pre-orders or I don't know. It just seems sort of, it's not how you expect a major company to be run. But no, I agree with you on the, there are some folks for whom a Fitbit serves their purpose perfectly. So it just not enough room in that market, I think, for both a Pebble and a Fitbit.
I did think Pebble doing a second Kickstarter was a little strange. You know, you see other startups will do one Kickstarter and get their first product off the ground. And then after that, you see them hitting all the retail markets and releasing new products that similarly hit those same retail markets, but they never do another Kickstarter again or Indiegogo or whatever it is they may choose to use. But yeah, it was strange for Pebble to go, let's release a second product on Kickstarter. It's like they never made enough money on the first one to really back their R&D and their production processes to get the second one off the ground.
Most of the time, if you're a company, you go out and you get venture capital, you get investors, and then they own a piece of the company. That's the biggest problem that I have with Kickstarter. It's basically people who are investing in a company but get nothing in return. Like, you know, they don't get a piece of the company. They don't get that. That's the thing that just sort of like really, really irks me. Like, it's
and sometimes at a discount,
you get your product. For electronics, I can see your point. So I've gotten pins where those pins wouldn't have gotten made unless a bunch of people said, hey, that's a pretty cool looking pin. And I've gotten, there's games that have done, I mean, Cards Against Humanity, Exploding Kittens, you know, that kind of stuff has worked really well where trying to get enough funding to build something like that. For electronics, Kickstarter has not been has not worked very well for me. I've bought several different things and none of them ever work. So, or, you know, I'm not going to say none of them. Some of them have probably barely worked. But so just this week, I paid for a, you know, a Kickstarter for this new USB-C dock that's going to be made for the MacBook Pros. It's got two USB-C ports and it fits on one side and it's got a bunch of different other ports and it works better than say a dongle would where you just put a cable in. It kind of attaches to the side and it looks like the laptop. So we'll see if, you know, how long that takes to come out. The company has a track record of producing these things and these type things and selling them. Back to Fitbit. I think Fitbit is actually more, it's like a gateway drug to Apple Watch. I mean, that's what happened with me is last Christmas is when I got my Apple Watch. Well, on Black Friday, I bought a Fitbit. And after having the Fitbit for a month and realizing how much I liked the fitness tracking on the Fitbit, like I didn't know if I would like something like that, then Target put the Apple Watches on sale at Christmas time. So I returned my Fitbit to Amazon and bought the Apple Watch. Like it was kind of a gateway drug where I bought this cheaper item and I realized, wow, I kind of like, you know, having this on my wrist and the little bit of things that Fitbit could do. And so I went, you know, all the way to Apple Watch because I liked it. So I, you know, it could serve a purpose like that.
For something like Cards Against Humanity, that makes sense, right? You do a Kickstarter for that. It's one of those things where I can see that. I get that. But when you're doing something like a piece of electronics, there's so much effort that goes into fabricating something like that. And oftentimes people that are new at this don't realize the amount of effort that it's going to take to get something created. And oftentimes you see it go badly. And that's the part that's disappointing. Like you, even if you look at the Oculus Rift, right? Had a successful Kickstarter. It was great. And they get bought by Facebook. And, you know, you have a lot of people that are like, well, you know, hey, I paid for this. And I think they still got what they had paid for. But again, you're essentially investing in a company, but you don't get any of the benefits of investing in a company. And that's the part that's, you know, and again, we're not talking about oftentimes if you donate, you know, if you're buying a piece of electronics that's a couple hundred bucks, you're not limited to just donating a couple hundred bucks. You can back it for as much as you want. You can go beyond what it is you want to back. It would be nice to see something like this where if you're going to put up money for something like that, you actually get a piece of a company in doing it, right? You truly invest in it rather than just give it what I'd like to think of as a hopeful pre-order.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, I do agree with you that as far as electronics goes, they hardly ever live up to the hype of what they were actually supposed to do. They work, but they don't work exactly right, or they work, or they're not quite as fast as you expected, or, you know, they don't live up to the pre-hype of the product that they thought they were going to put out there. Because of the nature of Kickstarter, they're on this tight schedule of, okay, we raised our funds and we're going to release it on this date. And first off, they rarely make the date. And then they're still rushed. And so they end up rushing the product along and it just ends up not being as good as something where you release it when it's ready and then you sell it. With Kickstarter, they've already sold it to thousands of people and they've got to get it out as soon as they can. So there's no, you're paying for something that doesn't exist and then you're a beta tester for this new product. And so there's just that life cycle that for electronics, you know, I've bought, you know, like Wi-Fi devices or little things like that. They haven't lived up to the pre-hype of the products. But like I said, things like Cards Against Humanity and some of those, they're good.
Yeah, that's kind of sad about the Fitbit. I hate to see people lose their jobs. Hate to see something go out of business. I just wish they had come up with a more compelling product. Let's see what else is going on. Apple Music hits 20 million subscribers, and that's pretty good. Back in September, I think Spotify had 40. In just a year and a half, Apple has gotten half of those numbers, and Spotify has been around since what, 2009, 2010, something like that. They've been around a while, even if they weren't in the U.S. for a long time. So that's pretty impressive numbers. What do you guys think about that?
Well, it's taken a while for the streaming music paradigm to really take off. I mean, you know, last.fm has been doing it for a long time. and then Spotify, and there's others. And I don't mean radio services. I mean to where you actually could build playlists and listen to whole albums. Even Jim said he's sort of a newbie to it, and his first foray into the market was with Apple Music. And I still think I'm relatively new to it. Like, I had used Spotify for a short time, actually used Last.fm probably 7 or 8 years ago when I thought it was cool to scrabble every song that I listened to.
I had briefly used Spotify probably maybe 6 months before Apple Music came out, and then I would subscribe to both of them for probably a month before I made my switch. If you go back and listen to it, I think it's like episode 1 or 2 for us is where we have the big Spotify Apple Music discussion. As far as Apple Music and their subscribers, I think it's kind of like shooting fish in a barrel. It's almost like, to me, it should be included. It's just like a subscription to the iPhone. Like, you get an iPhone and you get a music subscription service now. If you're a music listener, you should have one or the other. If you like music, it doesn't make sense for you to not be an Apple Music or Spotify subscriber nowadays. It just does not make sense.
I agree. And one of the comments on one of the websites where I saw this news was like, well, that's really disappointing considering it's installed on all the phones by default. And I'm thinking, you're getting people to pay for something. Like, if you have Apple Maps and it's only got 20 million users after a year and a half, yeah, that would be pretty sad because it's by default and it's free. But if you're putting something on there and you're expecting people to pay $10 a month for it at a minimum, and you get 20 million subscribers in a year and a half, that's really actually impressive, considering it also faces competition in that space.
I mean, yeah, the Apple Music app is included, but once you open it, you still have to opt in and put in tell it to use your iTunes credit card credentials. You know, there's still that extra layer. It's not like it's just automatically toggled on for you.
Agreed.
And the butthurt that people get when you tell them something's $10 a month. I mean, seriously? $10 a month. $10 a month, all the music I can listen to, any album I can think of. I've been listening to Christmas music for the last 2 weeks, streaming it. I downloaded that Peanuts album, and I've probably listened to it a half a dozen times. I was, listening to it on the plane. That's the easiest $10 I spend a month. And I think for people who use Spotify, I'm not going to sit here and say Apple Music better or Spotify is better. I like Apple Music because it's baked into my phone. I know that Spotify has some better features around playlists, and they had some really awesome built-in playlists when I was using it. But for me, just it being baked in, that's why I'm an Apple Music user.
The other thing, too, if you consider something like, consider streaming audio versus streaming video. Streaming video is extremely balkanized to the point of, if you want a TV show, you almost need a third-party app to figure out, is it on Hulu? Is it on Netflix? Is it on a mixture of Hulu and Netflix? Take The Blacklist on NBC, right? You can see new episodes on NBC.com, but then after like 6 months or something, they're exclusive to Netflix. Like, it's a weird situation that you have there. With music, yeah, you'll have something that's exclusive for 30 days or 45 days or something like that. But for the most part, the catalogs are remarkably similar on both services. So there aren't as many gaps, and you can listen to entire albums. Things aren't cycling off like on Netflix or Hulu. Series come and go. Hey, if you didn't watch Battlestar Galactica before last week, they're all gone or whatever. It just is an example. That doesn't happen on the music catalogs. You can hear, unless it's some big high-profile.
Yeah, the Kanyes and the Beyoncés of the world are the only ones that can pull that off. Every other artist wants to be everywhere they can be as soon as they can be to get their name out there. It's only the biggest artists, like I said, Kanyes and Beyoncés and Dre. Of course, we know where Dre will be, but.
Just the funny thing there is that Netflix is $8.99 a month, and people are always griping, oh, the content of the library sucks. But you look at Spotify and Apple Music, you have virtually every recorded song in history at your fingertips for $10 a month. I mean, what's not to love?
Yeah, I have a funny story about that. Just this past week, we went to my son's Christmas concert, and he plays trumpet in the band. Well, they did a little jazzy rendition of We Three Kings, and I told my wife, oh, that reminds me from when I was a kid, and we were watching the California Raisins on their Christmas special on CBS when I was probably 10 years old, and they did a little sort of a jazzy R&B Motown rendition of We Three Kings, and sure enough, I pulled it right up on Spotify. I mean, to be able to find something as sort of obscure as the California Raisins, I mean, that backs up your exact point about every recorded song ever.
The film industry and TV industry need to be as smart as or at least need to be as beat down, I guess, as the music industry, right? The rampant piracy that hit the music folks made them a little more open-minded when it came to this sort of thing. But I think the film and TV folks still don't see the light.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I think they learned that we all can't be super mega rich, but we can make a good living. We can do what we love. We can make music and still make a living doing this. And we can still tour and, you know, and make money off that. You know, we don't have to be stupid rich and, you know, to do this, but we can make a great living putting it out there everywhere. It's almost like musicians, they want to put their music in people. They want you to listen to it. Their goal is to have the most people listen and appreciate their music. Whereas actors, or maybe it's the movie studios, they don't have that, where they just want to push it out to as many places. You know, you don't want it on Netflix and Hulu and PlayStation View. You know, you don't want to push it out there where everybody can get to it. We want to control it. We want to control it. And that, I mean, that's what they live around, is they want to control that intellectual property. Sorry, I couldn't think of my word there. Whereas for musicians, it's like the more ears, the better. And with Hollywood, they don't have a more eyes, the better attitude.
So I think what's going to happen, I think what's going to change that a little bit, is you notice that all the streaming services, all the platforms are now really getting into their own content, right? Netflix said it's going to double what it's doing this year into 2017. They're making this big play into content that they control, I think, for that very reason. And as that goes on, that's going to devalue some of these older things that aren't that people are asking a high amount of money for now. I think eventually, as time goes on, you're going to see that Spotify of video at some point. When, you know, what does Netflix do when Netflix has enough content that it owns entirely globally, that it doesn't need to negotiate, you know, high rights for something like, you know, a Seinfeld or, you know, something like that, you know, where it's, hey, it'd be great to have the streaming rights to this TV show, but you know what, we're doing just fine with everything that we're making over here. So,
or it forces somebody like the Seinfelds to play a little nicer.
Yeah. Hey, it's better to make some money off of this than, you know, syndication plays into a lot of that too. So over the air TV is still more relevant, I think, than radio was. So, you know, radio had dwindled to the point where it's been almost like the print industry, right? It's not as relevant as it used to be. And TV, a big hit on TV now, I think The Big Bang Theory draws at its height 10 million people. And, you know, 30 years ago, a number one hit, something like The Cosby Show, would have 10 million would have been a bad week for it.
Yeah, those were in the 30s, right? You know, close to 30.
Yeah, the sheer number of people that watched TV in those days, because there was no other choice, would have been a runaway, mega, amazing hit today if something had the numbers that we had 30 years
ago. I've had Netflix long enough to where I can remember where you would log into Netflix and you'd have to decide what movie to watch instead of trying to find a movie to watch. You'd have like six choices, and now there's just not near as many. But here I was up till 3 a.m. last night finishing the latest season of Longmire, because I got so into it that I just kept watching and kept watching and kept watching, and like, all right, I've got an hour left, I've got 2 hours, you know, whatever. And so I watched, you know, all the way through, and that's now a Netflix exclusive. It was a cable show that
Annie
that Netflix kind of picked up, and it's been made the latest season or two seasons. Yeah, I loved it. I really enjoyed the show. I mean, it, and like I said, I was up till 3 a.m. watching it. So
did you guys see that you can now play piano on your MacBook Pro's Touch Bar?
Yep, I've messed with it this morning some. It was kind of neat. It's got 128 voices to it, so you could have it do sort of the Ronald Troutman computerized voice, or, you know, a thousand children going ah ah ah. It's pretty neat, and it also has the traditional just grand piano. There has been some naysayers who are saying, well, it's stupid to put something that small on the touch bar, but I think it's more of proof of concept than it is usability.
No, I think it's great that people do stuff like that. I mean, it's taking it in directions. Most of the most interesting things you ever see pop up on the iPhone or the iPad or the Mac are things that people didn't think, yeah, who would have thought we could do that? You know, just pushing the envelope, and then you throw enough stuff out there, something will stick. So it seems like a natural thing to be able to, hey, I'm going to just stick this little cute thing out there.
So I guess we could throw in a little follow-up here. So that virtual keyboard is virtual in my apartment because I don't have a new MacBook Pro anymore. I returned mine last Sunday to Apple. I just started having enough problems with it. So I had the key issue that they couldn't fix and they weren't sure when they were going to be able to fix it. And then on last Saturday, my system UI started locking up. So the time and the battery charge indicator would just lock up and not change values. So I could come back 3 hours after using it and it would still have the same time in the bar. I could kill that system UI process and everything would come back. And that combined with the key problems, I just decided, let's just return it. It's a lemon. And so when I returned it on Sunday, I kind of went late in the day because I knew the mall would be crazy. I walked right in, kind of showed the girl, you know, told the girl the problem. She didn't even ask to see the key problem. She did say that she thought that the MacBook was not eligible for the holiday return period, which was greatly expanded from the normal 2-week return to as long as you received it by at some point in November, all the way through the Christmas Day, you could do a return until like January 6th. She wasn't even gone 5 minutes and came back and said, yeah, my manager said no problems, that we're sorry. And, you know, because I had told her, you know, I don't want to give it back either. I want my new laptop, but I had already ordered one earlier in the week just in case. So now my new ship date is sometime the end of this month. So it is what it is. I did change my configuration to go to the 1 terabyte hard drive instead of the 512.
Good man.
That I got last time. So I that was the only change in my configuration. But I, after having it a couple weeks and listening to you two give me a crap about the 512, I decided, yeah, you're probably right. So I went to the 1 terabyte.
If only you'd maxed out the CPU, that would have been the total baller move. And then you would, because you're going to keep it you'll probably have that thing for 6 or 7 years. I'll bet you.
Today or 6 years from now, I would not be able to tell that CPU is any different. I just don't think it'll ever, it just doesn't come into play enough. The CPU is plenty fast enough to do everything I'm going to do. I'm not mining Bitcoins or anything like that. The hard drive.
Virtual machines.
I'll give you the hard drive. I'll give you, and I upgraded the graphics too, just in case I somehow become a gamer again or need that. And I'll use that for mining my Bitcoins. I'll use the graphics GPU. So anyway, a little follow up there. I didn't have to give my MacBook Pro back to Apple, but I chose to give my MacBook Pro back to Apple. So I got the full credit and I'll have a new one come in later this month.
When you're running SQL Server with 30 gigs of RAM or something in a virtual machine, one day you're going to be like, man, I wish I had just had just a little bit more CPU. Just a little bit more CPU would have just pushed this over the edge.
I wish I could make it go to 11.
Exactly.
If I would have just listened to the bees.
That's right, man. The bees will never, never put you wrong. I myself have a little bit of follow-up as well. So a few weeks back, I was listening to a back episode of ours, as I do that sometimes, just to make sure for quality control purposes that I did okay in editing. And I remember I was talking a little bit of smack about the Ecobee 3 thermostats, saying I was unhappy with them. Well, now we're several weeks in, and I got my issues worked out. It really should have been obvious to me. I don't know why I didn't think of this before, but the real issue that I was having this issue where it was either freezing or hellfire. There was no in between. And I think what the problem was that 5-degree delta that comes in by the default setting was really where I was having a problem. I ratcheted that down to a 2-degree delta. And things are much more manageable. It's much more of a set it and forget it type of thing. I leave it on auto. And here in Georgia, it's been unseasonably cold for December, right? We're talking 20, 25, 30 degrees, which normally that doesn't happen for us until, you know, like late January, mid-February, something like that. You know, normally I can just set it and say, leave it 68 degrees. And, you know, used to, I would just throw the air on all the time and it would never kick on. And I'd wake up and it'd be like 63 degrees. And I'd be like, whew, that's a little bit chilly. And I turn the heat on for a minute, but now the heat will kick on, the air will kick on, whatever it needs to do. It's almost perfectly climate controlled in my house with give or take a degree. So I'm very, very pleased with the Ecobees now. Something I didn't notice is that when you're at a distance, they have the display, they're always on. And the temperature in that area is always prominently displayed in a huge font. It knows when you walk past it or approach it. The moment you get close, the UI changes so that you can change it. So there's something in there that's detecting you. Getting close. I don't know if it's a light sensor or something, but it knows and will automatically change the UI, little things like that. So I'm sort of
That would kind of freak me out.
No, it's really smooth when it happens. The animations are really cool. And, you know, I was a little bit tough on this. I was like, well, maybe I should have just bought that Lyric T5 thermostat that I had been thinking about getting from Honeywell. They're cheaper. You know, they're a little more, they're smart, but they're still not that smart. But no, I really don't regret the Ecobee at all. Glad I bought it.
So the Ecobee is the Jarvis of thermostats.
Yeah, it's really not bad. It was just getting past that initial
learning curve.
You know, I had this equilibrium that I had with the old thermostats, and I don't need a learning thermostat normally because, again, my wife and I keep such weird schedules that, you know, there's never 2 weeks that are exactly the same. The geofencing does work on it if you want to use it. I myself, you know, I got one of the things I discovered with the geofencing is when I leave my house, I kept getting that notification that it says, do you want to run the away automation? And you get home, do you want to run the home, you know, the arrived automation? Which I did, but, you know, it just constantly asking me was kind of annoying. The other thing that's sort of weird, if this is not a first world problem, I don't know what is. If you're driving to my house, you pass behind my house on the street before you approach and come around to the neighborhood. So you can trigger, if you had it so that it automatically ran the home automation, you could trigger unintentionally what you wanted to do. So let's say I'm leaving my house and I tell it I'm away. Well, as I drive behind my house, as I leave the neighborhood, it thinks I'm back and then would run the, wow, you're only gone like 30 seconds. Wow. So again, I sort of disabled the automatic geofencing ability in that, and I just run it as I need it, but it's been really good. The other night is kind of freaky. My wife got home a little bit late. She went to the store after work. And as soon as she had pulled into the garage, I'm unloading her vehicle. I go back there and all of a sudden I hear the beep, 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 beep. And my garage starts to auto close. I'm like, wow, that's weird. What's the? And then I remembered, oh, wait, it's 10:45 and I have my home set to go into night mode. So the garage will automatically close. The lights will start turning off in the house. My fan will come on upstairs. Like, you know, it starts shutting down. We were just running a little bit late that day. That was sort of freaky. But I'm sort of digging this whole set something on a schedule, and it's not just lights. It's anything you can control, which is nice.
That situation sort of reminds me of, you know, Planet Hoth or some sort of other sci-fi thing, because it starts to get late in the day and it's like, well, we have to close the main doors so we don't freeze to death.
Exactly. I don't want my Tauntaun getting out. Don't let your Tauntaun escape. That may be the episode title. So, no, you know, for us, though, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but most of the time, I remember to shut the garage door. Well, normally there have been times I get up the next morning and I go to throw something in the recycling, open the garage door, and it's been open all night. And I'm not saying anybody's at blame, but it's not normally me. That's all I'm saying. So, you know, it got to the point that every night before I went to bed, I would have to have this OCD thing where I had to open the garage, you know, the door to the garage to look out to make sure the thing is closed. Well, now I don't have to worry about it because I know at a certain time, if somebody left it open, it's going to close itself, which is, you know, kind of a nice thing. And one day when I get to the point that I'm ready to incorporate locks and other types of things into maybe my home alarm system in the same way, I don't have to ask my wife, hey, did you set the alarm before you came up? Oh, no, you didn't. Okay. So now I have to, you know, do it through the remote. I want to just be able to say, all right, well, at 11 p.m., if all of this is not done, initiate lockdown protocol. And it just does its, its thing. So that's what I'm hoping for.
It's like the purge at Brian's house.
If I get that big shell that goes around my house. Well, we'll be back next week, and that should do it for now. Say goodbye, fellas.
Goodbye, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. We can be found on Twitter. I'm at Brian B. That's B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's B-I-G-J-I-M. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.